your Tangible Assets Advisor. I am Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is the name you can trust. We've been doing business over two decades, and we're very committed to our clientele, to the community, to the industry. Honesty, integrity, and professionalism is our motto in every transaction, that is. So where Coins Plus offers every single thing that's associated with our industry. We call ourselves a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. And what that means is there's nothing related to our industry, whether it's any form of precious metals, any form of investing, hard, you know, soft, whatever, you know, we do it all. We buy everything. We specialize in everything. We have experts. We're a very non-niche organization. And in our business, there's people that specialize in little bitty niches, and they do very well because they become experts at that. I'm a little different. I want to become an expert at everything, and I know there's a lot of people that are like, I've had people like, I'll be honest, we've had people try to work here that just aren't made for that massive memory dump that this industry provides. There's so much to know. There's been literally, I mean, just info, but since the original, the first coins found or made, that, you know, 1500 BC roughly. Oh, nice. Somebody didn't shut the phone off. Guess who that is? That would be Moa. Good job, Kevy. So you've had coins around for 3,500 years, roughly. I mean, that's debatable because archaeology, you know, they assume everything is as they found it. Which is foolish, because what do you think the odds are? I mean, when it comes to gold and silver, guess what happens to it? Melt. You know, people melt it down and refine it, and they use it again. Why? Because it gets better. It's an amazing element, is what they are. Melting down gold is an example numerous times in the Bible for refinement and purity and excellence, you know? And so it's a normal thing over history. There's a lot of things. I get into out-of-place artifacts a little bit, or a lot I used to, but those are things that are found on Earth that do not equate with the theory of evolution, and they are blatantly all over. As a general rule, one of the things to look for is the fact that man, we're always taught that we're getting so much smarter, so much better. You know, we're so intelligent, and well, we have gained a lot of technology, but we've also gained a lot of people, and we're using the elements that God gave, which is incredible. If you think about everything we've made, and I mean, wow, you know, in my recording studio here, I'm sitting in front of a Panasonic flat screen TV. Okay. I probably should just shut off. I'm going to shut off the radio. I'm going to go watch soap operas. No, I won't do that to you. But the thing is, I mean, every component in that is made from something on Earth. And you're like, well, no, not really. It's synthetic. Okay. What do you make synthetic stuff out of? Other stuff that's not, you know, what you expect it to be. It's all stuff God made. Everything, you know, I look around, I'm sitting in front of a huge block of electronics and a big mixer board and a remote control for the TV, and I got a laptop in front of me. This stuff in the, you know, the flat screen TV, and I look to the right and there's a cable box, and over here is a printer and another computer in the room. I mean, think of this. Just go back 250, 300 years. Think of the absolute incredibility of what we're doing. That's not a word, probably, but think about it. It is amazing to me. I just think it's incredible. The earth that God gave us, I mean, I'm just getting a little excited there, but yeah, he gave us just this. We think we're rich with resources. We are, but the resources are so much deeper than what we find in the earth. Think about it. God created this universe and this Earth and the Milky Way galaxy and our sun and the exact distance from the star and our planet. And, you know, so that our planet just coincidentally happens to be the temperature range happens to be within the bandwidth of the freezing and cooling and or not freezing and warming and vaporization of water. We can have water in all three states on this planet. You may not know this. You can't do that on any of the other planets in our solar system. You can't. There's no way. If there's no atmosphere, you got nothing. If you went on Mars, well, according to what we're told by, you know, scientists, but we'll assume they're correct. If you went on Mars, their atmosphere, I think they estimate is, you know, like 1/10 of ours or something. So they basically have none. Because if you went to the top of Mount McKinley, I think your atmosphere would be about 30% of sea level. If they're at 10%, it's pretty bad. And water would just boil and float away right there. But when I said, well, not really, I was thinking about Venus. It's interesting. They've always considered Venus our twin sister. It's the same size as us. Of course, it's orbiting at a little closer to the sun. But, you know, I love astronomy. We sent a probe to Venus many, many moons ago, and we built it to last, okay? Guess what the Mars surface of Venus is like? Well, I'll tell you. It's 900 degrees Fahrenheit, and then you can't, you know, your sunblock's just not going to work because the atmosphere is pure sulfuric acid, okay? You may not know what that means, but it means you be melted in about 1/1,000,000th of a second, and so would your car and everything else. They built a spacecraft, designed a probe or whatever, designed to land on Venus, and they were pretty sure that they had developed this thing so that it could make it through and, you know, get some good footage and even bounce back out and fly away. I remember watching the videos from inside the probe or whatever you call it, and just watching the screen just kind of start going wobbly and all this stuff, and you could just see it melting. Well, they apparently underestimated. Maybe they were wrong about 900 degrees. Maybe it's 1,300. I don't know. Interesting, we would call that our twin sister. I don't know. Maybe it's a temporary holding place for certain people before Christ comes back and cleans us all up and does his thing. I don't know. So anyway, there's a lot of out-of-place artifacts. There used to be a website. I'm going to look at it here. It's probably gotten a little old, but I used to like. There's one called saint.com. It's www.s8int.com. Used to be a really good site for looking up out-of-place artifacts. Things that just aren't consistent with the the agenda that we're fed by our media and our academia. And I'll tell you, I can finish my intro. I mean, Coins Plus is always buying and selling silver and gold. We specialize in rare coins. I'm very knowledgeable on them. We're very knowledgeable on them. We love them. We're not afraid to own them. When I say not afraid to own them, I mean, we've got a great inventory. And we help people do very well. If you got money to tuck away, tuck it away now. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm going to get forward here on some things, but I'm just saying we're heading for something in this country. We are sinful and it stinks, but I watched this morning way too much of the quote Trump impeachment inquiry, and I'll be talking about that here in a minute. We've lost our marbles. This is just insanity to me. So real quick wrap on the Coins Plus information, as you're aware, kind of a wrap. Not, I've got some other stuff to talk about relative to that. But anyway, so we're always involved in, you know, we're very knowledgeable. 25 plus years in the numismatic and rare coin and bullion industry. A lot of people are like, oh, I just want gold, silver, whatever. That's all fine. What we do a lot of is build portfolios. We do a lot of semi-numismatic stuff, okay? Now, just as an example, and no, I don't have any of these in stock, but I'm just going to tell you what's crazy. We've got gold, just say roughly $1,500 an ounce, okay? You've got the old $20 gold pieces. The St. Gaudens. Well, I do have some in stock. I just, never mind. I do have some in stock, but not enough. The old St. Gaudens are literally trading. So with gold at $1,500 an ounce, the old $20 gold pieces were created because we were on a gold standard and gold was $20 an ounce, okay? Roughly. It was $20.20 an ounce, if you want to be specific. But the 20 cents, I think you can do without. So the point is they made a nice big gold coin, $20 gold piece, smaller than a silver dollar, bigger than a half dollar, and about three times as thick, or double thick of the silver dollar, three times thick as the half. Most gorgeous coins, just amazing. When I got into this, when God led me in, and it's kind of weird because I've always kind of collected and all this, but when I really got in, all, you know, heart and soul, and I went into a coin dealer and I wanted to start investing, and the first thing I bought was $20 gold pieces, a couple of them, and a really nice roll of AUBU, they call it, almost uncirculated to brilliant uncirculated piece, silver dollars. That was the first coins I ever bought. And I just was enamored. I mean, the piece dollars from the 1920s, and I, you know, this was in the early 90s probably or whatever. And the St. Gaudens, you know, were just so gorgeous. I just couldn't put them down. But some people get the fever. It's awesome. I love it. I love coins. But if you invest, we'll build you a nice portfolio. But don't do what I did. Don't obsess over it every day. I'm a collector, though. I have a free pass. So if you become a collector, if you become a really good collector, and you're looking for a career, come see us. But we need the proof. The proof's in the pudding. We can't hire people. We get a lot of applications from listeners, and they want to help out, but it's hard. You don't know people's skill sets. It has nothing to do with whether we like them or don't like them. Skill sets are everything. People have skill sets that, you know, they're given by God. It's an absolute talents thing. And I'm learning a lot more about that in life. And as I get to know people and what we're made of and how our capabilities work and everything. And God holds us each accountable for that. So just a quick, well, there's nothing I do quick when it comes to this, but I was going to say kind of a quick wrap. So we're always buying scrap gold jewelry, diamonds, gold, silver coins, collectible coins, you name it, we buy it, okay? But what we really do is help people preserve their portfolio, and here's our philosophy. People that aren't familiar with our industry don't, it's hard to be comfortable, but everything we have and everything we deal in with coins, this is what's amazing about coins. It's a good business, and here's why. Every single item that we inventory, which is millions, has a fixed value. It has a liquid value. It's a hard asset. And I'm not talking just about a $20 gold piece. Yeah, those are great. Well, what I was getting at with the 20s, just to finish that up, is that they're trading for not like uncirculated. I mean, this is insane, okay? You've got like gold at $1,500. Uncirculated $20 gold pieces are trading for like $1,600-ish. I mean, that is the silliest thing I've ever seen in my years. This is, you know, 7% over the gold spot price, like for an antique $20 gold piece that were all confiscated and melted and some were preserved. It's nuts, folks. And what's going on? Everything in this world right now is nuts. It's upside down. Okay. I sat and watched this Trump impeachment stuff. Why? Because I really care. I mean, I am severely and sincerely concerned for this nation. What I've seen on this is the end of shame. Okay. Now, you say the end of shame. I have friends that are like, no blame, no shame, and all that stuff. Okay. I get it. It's not a healthy emotion per se, but I'm going to argue there are different types of shame. There is humility shame. It's not, I guess the word shame is more of a self abasement and maybe maybe you didn't tune in to listen to definitions and opinions on the word shame. So let's just say the end of humility, the end of dignity, the end of honor, the end of respect. That's what's going on in this nation right now. When I get on the air and I talk about this stuff, I'm always thinking, you know, I don't want to just be that harping radio guy that goes, well, you know, today and Adam Schiff said this and the lady said that and they're liars and they're liars and they're liars. I don't want to say that, but I'm going to say this. They're liars. Oops, sorry. Freudian slip. Unbelievable. So we're sitting in a bad, you know, we're becoming almost tribal. And I like, there's some sayings I remember. This came to me. It's a saying I heard a long time ago. It says, every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up. It knows it must outrun the fastest lion or it will be killed. Every morning in Africa, a lion wakes up. It knows it must run faster than the slowest gazelle or it will starve. So think what I said. The gazelle has to outrun the fastest lion, and the lion only has to run faster than the slowest gazelle, or it will starve. It doesn't matter whether you're a lion or a gazelle. When the sun comes up, you'd better be running. Okay? That's where we're at right now in this nation. It's like we have got a lot going on. And I am telling you, I mean, this country, politically, when you get up, you better be running. Spiritually, when you get up, you better be running. You have a mission from God as a believer. If you're a Christian believer, you have a mission. You are, you know, there's the co-mission, the great co-mission or commission. We're familiar with that. But we have got to defend this nation. This nation, you know, you guys listened to like our Veterans Day show where we had Sergeant Major Joseph Locknett on. Honestly, one of the most decorated soldiers in the entire U.S. military. And, you know, things have been said about him internally and externally. There's been, I mean, in the most positive light. He's super humble. He does not like the light shone upon him. But I'll tell you what, folks. That guy, spending time in a room with that guy renews my hope and my strength in this nation. I mean, you talk about the embodiment of America. Our U.S. military, folks, those guys are special. We're the best. We are the best, hands down. Joseph Locknett, I asked him why. He said, American exceptionalism. And you know what's funny? I was just like, my heart leapt. Why? Obama slapped that term around and knocked it down and kicked it down the street. American exceptionalism is trash, he said. You know, every country has exceptionalism. We're no different than any other country. We're just another country in the world. Do you buy that? To him whom much is given, what? Much is required. To the nation who's given much, what's required of us? Much. What's much? Much is good in God's eyes. We owe God much. Not much money, although we need to be tithing and giving and charitable, but we owe him much of whatever we got. We owe him the best of what we got. Folks, you live in a nation. And I want to put this into perspective. It's just funny because I'm a mathematician by nature. I mean, that's my education. When I got out of college, I was in an actuarial program for a while that I ended up deciding to move over into banking just because I liked working with people more than a 11-foot room under a building with, you know, like, I don't even know, probably 150 linear feet of tables and books. And, you know, I could do it. I was great at it. I was able to get the company to let me go do general liability audits and stuff just because I had to get out of there. But mathematically speaking, we are at about roughly 8 billion citizens currently alive in the United States of America. Now, what they'll tell us, archaeologists, of course, is, you know, this is there's more people alive today than all the people that have lived before us. Okay, not quite. We had this thing called the flood, okay? So we had, if you do a population study prior to the flood, based on the emergence of Adam all the way to Noah, people lived 700, 800, 900 years. I've done all the mortality studies and everything, and I've skewed them to the point where they only have like 2 kids every 100 years. I increased the mortality rate to much higher than it should have been. And by the time of the flood, I was at 12 billion people. Okay. Right or wrong, I don't know. But, okay, so I know it's right. It's not consistent with what we think. We just don't understand what's back there. But I've done a lot of research lately, too. I've done lately and for the last 20 years. I believe that the legend of Atlantis is the legend of Earth before the flood. It was one single continent. We know that because Pangaea is obvious. We still see the movement. The Bible tells us the Earth separated after the flood. The tectonic plates shifted. We've got stories of, you know, in the days of Peleg, the Earth was divided. We've got stories of the Earth right after the flood, you know, breaking open and sucking people down into huge crevices of water and fire. You know, that doesn't happen now. Now, you might say, well, that's God. Yeah, it is and it isn't. And here's what I mean. It's like, well, it is. But, you know, what's more amazing that proves God's existence? That he goes wham with an anvil and he splits the earth open to consume his enemy, or God knows the exact time and the exact place of the exact catastrophe, and he is able to draw the people that he wants to make an example of to the exact place that this catastrophe is going to occur prior to it occurring. What's more impressive? The God of wrath fist smashed the earth. I'm sorry. I've been around my grandson too much. I'm thinking about Hulk smashes, and I don't think God is. Or that God preordained everything. That's what the Bible says, is God's preordained all this. What? You know, you get into that destiny thing. I can get all philosophical and teary-eyed, but I'm not going to do it. So here's the deal. Let's just say before the flood, there was 12 billion people. Let's say there were 6. I don't even care, but here's the point. Since the flood, we're at 8 billion, and we've probably lost a few billion. You know, so whatever. Just say there's been 20 billion people. We got 8 billion now, say 12 billion before. That doesn't even count the buildup of people who passed away. I mean, you think over the last 4,000 years since the flood, how many people have died? A lot. How about all of them? And there's 8 billion now. There's probably another 8 billion that have died or whatever. I don't want to sit and teach math class, but 20-some billion people. You live in a country that has 300 million people. Okay? Now, I'm going to do some math here. Mm-hmm. Didn't plan on doing it, or I would have been more prepared. Let's see. And we're doing it. Oh, the calculator doesn't like that. So basically, it's you're one. Well, we are on top of that. So in the overall population of history, you're like one out of a million or more. Then you're as an American citizen. Then now add on top of that, we're the wealthiest nation, not just in contemporary times, we're the wealthiest nation in history, okay? We're the most powerful nation in history. So what I want you to realize is you, in God's eyes, are one and a half out of about 10 million people. That's your odds of being here today. You're in the richest, best, greatest, God-fearing, God-loving, God-ordained nation on earth today. Now, there's a lot of us, so you might think, well, yeah, it's coincidence. Well, just always remember, coincidence is when God chooses to remain anonymous, which is a kind of a saying, but he doesn't choose to remain anonymous. You just can't see him, or you choose not to, or you don't have eyes of faith. Everyone who's listening, now, I could just go on. You were chosen by Jesus Christ as a believer. I mean, there may be listeners that aren't, you know, no offense, but the majority of you were. So now you live in the greatest nation in the history of the world. You're 1.5 out of a million, or 10 million or whatever it is. And you're, you know, we could do the math on the wealth of the history, and the our poverty rate is 33 times higher than the rest of the world. Our poverty rate's 33 times higher than the rest of the world. We have people that living on welfare who are in the top 5% globally of income and living quality. Actually, it's top 3. It's out of control. So you've been chosen to be here at this time. Are you just chosen by God to be here, to fill space, or are we chosen for more? To him who much is given, what? Much is required. We've got health. We've got, you know, reasonable health care. That's a debate, etc. So we've been chosen to be on this earth at the most opportune time in history. And after Jesus Christ came, died, and resurrected, and saved us from our sins. I mean, you know, sure, there's people that, you know, had, you know, we only know what we know when we live in that era. But I'm just saying, you and I have been chosen to be in the greatest land, the greatest nation, literally the greatest continent with the greatest country based on the, I don't want to, I'll say it, greatest God, but the, well, we'll call him greatest God because people have their little G gods. And you're chosen to be here. It's important. Gratitude. Now, I want to read something here that it's something I got a while ago, and it's really good, okay? It was written, it's just an email that was written by a gal named, a college student named Alyssa Algren, who's in grad school for her MBA. It's a short article, but worth, you know, hearing. This is going to put you into perception of how our skewed perception. Okay, we need more money for the homeless, right? I can't remember if it was Cincinnati or who I saw. They're spending $8 million on a hotel, and then they're refurbishing the whole thing for another $8 million. They're going to be in, the city's going to be in at $16 million. Guess what they're going to do with it? Going to fill it with homeless people, okay? Now, you might go, well, hey, you know, you got to have a heart for those people. I do. I have a heart for everybody. I love people. I try to love people and see them through God's eyes. But I'll tell you what is causing homelessness? I know from a lot of personal experience, all the way from my dad being a bail bondsman forever. My mother worked in the court system her whole life, and I had the pleasure of being surrounded with it myself as I grew up. These people aren't all victims. How about that? They have extremely high criminal records. They have extremely high drug use. There's just a lot that goes into it. There's a ton. So when you enable a bad behavior, what happens? What happens in these democratic cities, and it is democratic cities only, that support the homeless? You know, I don't want that to sound wrong. We all kind of support them. That, you know, encourage it. Okay, they encourage it. They let them camp wherever they want. They let them camp on the sidewalks. I was in Seattle, and they're under this river up by, when you go from downtown under the interstate up above where I was visiting a relative who was very ill in Harborview Hospital there for a few weeks, and there was a river of human waste. It was bad, and I watched things I won't even get into. Needles all over the ground, okay? Now, it's one thing to deal to help people out of their troubles. But when they hit that kind of a low, it's low. Okay. So what I, in our homeless even are more wealthy than the poverty of the world. So let's read this. So this college student, this is a young girl's perception of reality. She said, "My generation is blind to the prosperity around us. I'm sitting in a small coffee shop near Nokomis, wherever that is, trying to think of what to write. I scroll through my news feeds on my phone, looking at the latest headlines of Democratic candidates calling for policies to fix the so-called injustices of capitalism. This terrible capitalism, this is me, not her, this terrible capitalism that forces people to follow their needs, wants, and desires to acquire what they need, want, or desire. What do you expect? If a man is hungry, is he going to go fish? Or in socialism, yep, he's going fishing. The government shows up, confiscates the fish. The fish gets thrown in the back of a truck with a million other fish. And it goes and gets stored somewhere. On the way, it gets rotten, misused, mistreated. After all, it's not their food. The elites eat something else. So that fish goes to the fish warehouse, and it's and you know, the rotten stench and bacteria, etc., goes on and on. And then they, you know, in an ideal socialistic society, then they try to evenly distribute the fish to everybody, so everybody gets an equal amount of fish. Not true. They waste it, lose it, use it for power and control. They learn that starving the people is the best way to control the people. Not only are they at your beck and call, they have no strength and no energy. So this is that terrible capitalism. So she says, here we go again. I scroll through my news feeds on my phone, looking at the latest headlines of Democratic candidates calling for policies to, quote, fix the so-called injustices of capitalism. I put my, she says, now I'm going to read her thing. If I jump off and talk, I'll let you know it's me. I put my phone down and continue to look around. I see people talking freely, working on their MacBooks. Okay, what's a MacBook cost? College quality, $2,500 to $3,000 bucks. This is me. Ordering food they get in an instant. So she says, I see people talking freely, working on their MacBooks, ordering food they get in an instant. I mean, come on. Seeing cars go by outside. The average car value in America is lower than you'd think, but it's $17,793 bucks. Okay. Every time you see a car, the average value is about $18,000. And that includes used beaters on the road and everything. And that includes all the beaters. It includes, it's basically taken from some data that I was reading where they evaluate the Blue Book assessment value on every licensed vehicle in the U.S., okay? And they do, and with statistics, you don't have to get every car. You do random samples all over the place, and you figure out your locations and your population of sample, and you go, what about L.A.? What about Dallas? What about this? What about that? And what, you know, is there skew or bias in there or whatever? So they figure it out based on the assessed taxable value of your vehicle, including licensed beaters that are probably sitting behind houses. So if that's $18,000, if you get the cars that are actually really on the road, you're probably $22,000-$23,000. Now, do that math and realize where Coins Plus, where I built my building here back in 2007, when we moved out of Pounder's Jewelry, we'd been there almost a decade. I'm in Spokane. I'm in a location on Division Street that may still be the highest traffic count in Spokane County. 50,000 cars a day go by here. 50,000 cars. If the average vehicle is, say, 20,000, I said 23 when you remove the beaters, just say $20,000 per vehicle, you're at $1 billion in vehicles per day that pass the Coins Plus store in just little bitty Spokane. $1 billion a day. in this poor nation that needs socialism to fix its woes, okay? Let me continue. I definitely have an opinion, don't I? All right. So anyway, let's get back and see if I can go further on this. She says, I see people talking freely, working on their MacBooks. They get their food in an instant. They see cars go by outside. We covered that. $1 billion a day go by here. And it dawned on me, she says, we live in the most privileged time, in the most prosperous nation, and we have become completely blind to it. This is her email. And I agree so much with that, folks. And our blindness has led us into this impeachment farce, folks. Ugh. If you even knew what this was doing to this nation and its roots and its meaning, for goodness sakes. All these lies and twists and turns. And anyway, I'll make notes and we'll get back to that. How about that? So then she goes on. She says, vehicles, food, technology, freedom to associate with whomever we choose. These things are so ingrained in our American way of life that we don't even give them a second thought. I'll repeat it. She like vehicles, food, technology. In my mind, I'd say, you know, houses, really good jobs, beautiful, clean cities, respectable roads. I'm not going to tell you Spokane doesn't have a crud load of potholes. But I mean, seriously, I've been to a lot of third world countries. I've never seen it like this. I mean, it is, you end up driving on dirt roads. Man, you break down, good luck. I mean, you can't even get cell service. I mean, it is different out there, folks. We are spoiled. It's like taking a brat, let's use the word, who grows up on some massive, you know, ranch or just a massive mansion on land and, you know, with servants and butlers and any kind of food they want whenever they want and tutors and, you know, life is just super good and whatever you want to wear, and they travel around the world and they're like, America needs socialism. Capitalism is evil. This is what we're starting to hear, and guess what? I don't buy it. I think we're twisted. I think it's called anesthetized, which means you have been, you have anesthetization. How about that word? Anesthetized. Okay, let's not do that. So anyway, it's like anesthesia. That's what it's based on. It's called ether. When I was in the car business, I hate to tell you this, I was a business manager. I didn't sell cars, so don't hold against me. They would call it the ether. You sell to people while they're under the ether. Okay, that was their term. What does that mean? They come in. They buy. They see the car they've been wanting. They drive it. They're on an emotional high. They're numb. The anesthetization has made them numb or blind to all their other responsibilities and, you know, privileges or whatever. So they go buy a car. They get a payment. It's too much probably, but they're so excited about the car and they don't consider everything else going on around them in their life, but they love the car and they need the car, and that's just the way it goes. We call it the ether. And that is what we're under here. We're under the ether. We don't think about all of our other responsibilities as stewards of this nation, fellow Americans. Remember those kind of terms coming out of presidents' mouths at State of the Union? My fellow Americans. That's how they speak. Because we are Americans. I want you to sear that word in your brain. You are an American. You live in the greatest nation in the history of this world. And we, to he who much is given, much is required. We have a great responsibility to fight to preserve this nation. Now people will be like, oh no, we got to be passive. No, that is so not the intent of this nation. Thomas Jefferson believed there would be a revolt every 25 years in this country. Well, guess what? It reminds me when I was in college in Bozeman, Montana, we had Yellowstone National Park about 60 miles to the south. Coldest temperatures on Earth and the, or not on Earth, in the continental United States in the winters. Just nasty. Beautiful park, special place. Starting under FDR, he had a no-burn policy. They, every time a fire would start in the park, put it out, put it out, put it out. That is not nature. Guess what happens when you do that? You got a big one coming. That was started in the 30s by FDR. I was there in the 80s, 50 years later. They haven't let the park burn. Well, guess what? When, you know, God, or let's go, Mother Nature, which doesn't exist, but it's natural law that God put into play. If you ever hear Mother Nature from somebody, you think, God's natural law. That's what we're talking about. So what happens is a fire starts and that thing goes wild. That park burned and burned and burned and burned. I had friends that worked on it. One of my best friends was, who's now a colonel, a full-bird colonel in the military, was worked on the fires. They were insurmountable, untouchable, unbelievable, because we had neglected natural law, and in a way, physical law, okay? When we neglect natural law in this nation, we fall asleep. And what happens? We end up in a country that has F-16s and tremendous other weapons that are just unbelievable, indefensible. You cannot stand against. You know, we're not the beast. Don't take me wrong. But it reminds me of in Revelation, it says, who can stand against the beast? The beast system. So what's going on? These other countries someday are going to get the technology and military might of the United States military. And who can stand against the beast? And that's what happens if you neglect natural law. Thomas Jefferson was absolutely wise. He had a wisdom. He wrote in his journal that his desire was to attain to the level. He said his desire was to increase and, well, I'll just read it a quote here. He's, well, I won't because it's long. He says his desire is to increase in wisdom and attain knowledge to bring him as close to the wisdom and knowledge of Solomon as possible. And guess what? Thomas Jefferson was wise. At a time when books were rare, I don't know if you've been to D.C., to the Congressional Library, they have Thomas Jefferson's library there that existed when he passed away of over 6,000 books. Okay, whoopee. I got a big library, not that big. That's massive. Well, here's what's unique about Thomas Jefferson's book in his library. He'd read every one of them. Not once. Not twice, but he said at least three times. He believed the third time was the charm. He is the one that coined that phrase, the third time's the charm, in his journal. He said when he reads these books, the third time is the charm. That was his writing. You've heard it. Third time's a charm. You got 6,000 some hundred books. He read them three times. That's 18,000 some books. Wait a minute. We forgot all the books he gave to his friends. They are not sure, but they've tried to kind of pick up the pace of his. He handed out books to people. They said Thomas Jefferson would carry a massive satchel on his side filled with as many as 40 or 50 books. And when he went around, he handed people books. He would have conversations with people, and he'd say, I have the perfect book for you. And he would hand out books. This is one of our greatest founders. I mean, think about that. And he was the one that created our education system. And he said, what we need is a Bible and a newspaper and a math book. Because he wanted people to filter everything they saw in the world through God's word. These were men of God that started this country, folks. These were men of God. Do not be lied to. These were, I think, the greatest men in the history of the world. God has impeccable timing. When Jesus Christ died in Jerusalem, it had been created as the absolute hub of the globe. Jerusalem possessed the epitome of Roman power. It possessed the epitome of religious power in the Jews. It had the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and it even had representation from all the other governments in the world came through Jerusalem. Jerusalem had become the trade capital of the globe. Gee, God made a place where Jesus Christ could come and everybody could see, and the witnesses never, well, basically that there were witnesses all around. Yep, that's God. And guess what he's done now? We're part of his glory story, you and I. And I'm just saying, Thomas Jefferson said we need a revolution every 25 years. Now, I'm not calling everybody, go get your gun and go run around and shoot people. Don't do it, because then they'll say I'm crazy and lock me up. Please don't do it. I am not saying that at all. I don't even know what a revolution means. It means a turnover of government. But if you postpone that natural cycle in our government system of citizen protection, you lose power, and then you get to the place where you can never get it back again, and that's where we are today. Now you get a nation that is stronger than an ox. You bring in a president who is stronger than an ox. And I'm sick and tired. I'm sorry, folks. I'm so tired of people going, well, you know, I just don't like how he says things. And I don't like when he tweets. It really bothers me how he tweets. How he tweets? I mean, he is under continuous attack all the time. I know no other man. I mean, not that I'm an expert on every man on earth, but I know of no other man with Donald Trump's skill set, fortitude, resilience. You might not like this one. Integrity. The man has integrity. They want to make him look like a mob boss and all this stuff. Where are the dead bodies? None. And not that that's a joke. The Clintons, watch Clinton Chronicles. And then go add Jeffrey Epstein, who is absolutely, they've recently concluded 100% that he was assassinated. Choked to death, got his neck snapped. Somebody took the sheet from a bed, tied it around his neck, tied it around the bedpost, and leaned him over and made it look like he just did a suffocation hanging. That's where you just lean forward and let it cut off your carotid arteries till you go to sleep. Minor technicality, he broke the hyoid bone and a few others that you can only break, get this, the hyoid bone. The greatest coroner, I guess, or forensic pathologist in the world is a guy, I can't remember his name, of course, that's, you guys hear me say that all the time. I'm too honest. I should quit saying that. But anyway, I wish I could remember his name, Dr. something or other. Bottom line is, he said that there is no possibility that that bone could be broken in the manner it was among two others, which have their own stories. The only way he said that bone could be broken is by someone stamping on someone's neck. Now, Epstein had too many names. That's the billionaire that, you know, did the supposed pedophilia. I say supposed because the guy's dead. He can't defend himself. Then they've tried to come out with stories, and CNN especially, when they started to say, oh, this death is so suspicious, and then they start looking at the Clintons. Bill was on that jet like 27 times, going to these private islands with these little girls or whatever they did, I don't know. But then all of a sudden the guy dies, you know, the prison guards fall asleep and just happen to miss it. Oh, shoot, the cameras were turned off, darn. You know? I mean, it's just ludicrous. We've got Hillary Clinton. hiding, you know, deleting what she says were 33,000 emails. Probably more. Well, we know why. And then bleach bidding her computer, having her staffer stamp on, remove the SIM cards from all their cell phones, stamp on the phones, smash them with hammers, take the SIM cards and burn them. Well, who does that? And why? Oh, by the way, that was after all of those materials were subpoenaed by Congress. And they say, Donald Trump is in contempt of Congress because he won't send himself and all the people that they demand for testimony. And they say they're going to accept that as an admission of guilt. He is the president of the United States of America. He's the commander in chief, the head of the entire military. He is the ultimate police officer. He's the head of all law enforcement in this nation. And he is a separate autonomous branch, three co-equal branches. The Congress cannot bully the executive branch. But guess what they're doing? They're bullying the executive branch. Bad, by the way. Michael Baden, I think, is the, just as a backup, I think Michael Baden is the name of the forensic pathologist who's amazing. And said, you know, so anyway, the Clinton Chronicles, they got them lined up, stacked up, dead bodies all over the place. Sorry, just being honest with you. So that's, you know, that. And then you got Trump, he's clean. I mean, he may look, you know what, you can't judge a book by the cover. Here's the way I see Donald Trump, and trust me, I had no intention of doing this. Donald Trump is in his 70s. Have you seen how sharp that guy is? Have you seen how motivated he is? Have you noticed how aggressive he is? Have you noticed how determined he is? Have you noticed how resilient he is? He may have a limited vocabulary, but he is a Manhattan, New Jersey boy. Okay? Not that Manhattan's in New Jersey, but he's got roots in both. And New York. I mean, it's not, you know, you think New York's the big city. It ain't. You know, growing up on the streets of New York probably isn't the easiest place to grow up. There's a lot of tough guys out there. I know them. I mean, there's a lot of tough boys that come out of that city. Well, Donald Trump was the toughest. He wasn't just the toughest physically. He went to a military high school. He was the equalizer, I heard from a couple different interviews. And he protected the weak, the downtrodden. He did not ever make fun of people. We've got this thing where he makes fun during the a campaign of a retarded guy. They say, I don't believe he did. But just to, you know, clarify my view on him, I think he's a relatively pure man. Oh, yeah, you get a tape recording of him getting off a bus. You know, but he was never going to run for president when he made some crass, rude comment about, you know, women that, you know, how they're enamored with fame or whatever. And, you know, who cares? It's locker. Even his wife, who's probably one of the most, Melania is probably one of the most beautiful women in the world. She's like, that's locker talk. That's boys. And I, you know, no offense, Mom, if you're listening, but my mom said, what man has not talked like that? She grew up in a court system. She has been an office woman. She's a beautiful, classy lady. She's always been known for her beauty and her class and her dignity. And she has worked in office environments. I mean, we had a fun time in our family. We had a lot of jokes, a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. And one thing about our family was humor. And I'm going to be honest with you. It wasn't always clean. Especially if you knew my dad. But anyway, I digress. Hang on. So, sorry about that. But the thing is, my mom, she said, she said that, you know, when she was making her way up in the world, you know, she'd have to put up with people, you know, and But she didn't just put up with these guys who'd come in with the rude joke of the day. She'd enjoy it. Oh, I suppose she's a racist and a sexist and a homophobe. No, we've lost our marbles. My wife and I have started watching movies from the past. And it's funny because people actually say what they think. And when I had my biggest transition in how we have been brainwashed, I've always been a little bit perceptive, I'll say. And in the 90s, they started doing the whack attack on speech. And I was like, this is terrible. In the 90s, I was like, this is Big Brother from the book 1984. And I thought, oh my gosh, they're going to make things so bad. You can't do this or do that. If you're around a woman, you can't say anything or whatever. And it just got crazy. And then you get this false pride, this intentional, people become specialists in intentional offense. Okay. And what that means is a guy, for example, just a prime example yesterday. I don't know who's who, but I'll just tell you what I heard on the news. So a gal was harping and moaning about not being hired because of her sex. The CEO of the company said hiring people based on their sex or race does not get you the best employees. Agreed? Yeah, you'd agree. If I go, oh, you're a woman, you're hired. Oh, you're black, you're hired. Oh, Hispanic, you're hired. Gee, we're diverse here. I don't even need to interview you. Now, I've got a guy over here with a PhD in numismatics or whatever, but I don't care. He's white. I want a black guy. Now, I'm not being facetious or racist. Please don't even go there with me. I will tell you the truth. I'm gonna confess something that maybe in this environment may be taken wrong, but I'm going to be honest. I try to be colorblind, but when I deal with people like black people and stuff, I actually treat them better because I knew for years what their heritage is. I knew the pain and suffering that they've gone through in this nation, and I know the pain and suffering they've gone through in history. I care. I know. And I know that if you're a black man in Spokane and there's, you know, 1,000 whites for every black or whatever it is, I mean, there's times they get uncomfortable. I get that. I respect that. I understand that. And it's really sad because we're not colorblind. Why should a guy feel bad because his skin's different? Because that's all that's different. Our DNA is the same. And they are the children of God. And how all those things came about, that's a different story. But, you know, we've got to be that way. We are being so divided as a nation. Just so, so divided. Now, after all that, believe it or not, I'm out of time. And I went way past the radio show. So, we will say take care, God bless, and those who listen online will hear it, and those who listen offline will not. Bye-bye, and thanks for tuning in. Take care.